What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is, of course, Thomas Drantz. He covers the team for The Athletic as well. We're coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, footwear, and orthotics working together with you in step. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. And you can send your thoughts in now. Lots going on the show today. Brendan Batchelor will join us at 12:30. Sean Gentile, also from The Athletic, we'll chat with us at 1 o'clock. Looking forward to that. Drantzer, how you doing, man?
Great.
Really?
No, I don't know. I'm fine. It's nice. I mean, it's a good day. Every day is a good day, bud. We're in the studio.
Not every day.
You're right, but we're in the studio together. The morning show hasn't stolen you away. I'm happy.
It's funny. That's not how I perceive it when I go on the morning show. I'm like, ooh, a nice break.
Praise be.
Yeah, I don't like it. I like my routine.
I think I need to do it every so often. It's like an absence makes the heart grow fonder thing. You know what I mean?
That's what my wife always says about my road trips.
Funny how people in your life keep saying that.
Why don't they send me away? I
couldn't tell you.
I'm stuck with Drantz all the time.
Yeah, but so often that Lena's dressing like me
now.
We
dress the same.
Yeah, we dress the same. I can't tell if that's on me needing to dress more masculine or just what's going on. But
it's definitely a note to you.
Your guys' sense of fashion is converging. It's meeting in the middle. All right, so we'll talk to Batch out. 12:30, Sean Gentile at 1, but of course lots to get into, so let's go to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas, hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, January 30th. The headline is, well, I still got to start. I'm not abandoning this bit just yet. Number one headline is JT Miller and Elias Pettersson are still Vancouver Canucks. Of course, we'll talk more about that. But the second headline is the Canucks have won 3 in a row after beating Nashville 3-1 last night. What does it all mean, Drantz?
Nothing.
What does it mean?
Nothing.
I think there's one thing at least that matters from last night's game. One thing. Well, maybe more. But
there's one thing that matters a lot, and it's Thatcher Demko.
That's what I was going to say.
Was incredible.
Yes. So because we are in this weird spot.
They got outplayed. Like here's the thing. They got outplayed. Thatcher Demko stole them 2 points.
Thatcher Demko was really good.
Incredibly good.
Because we're in this weird spot right now, right? Where it's like, we can talk about, you know, the flow of the game and who played well and who didn't and yada, yada, yada. But just big picture reacting to. No, but you know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying.
We can talk about the good players. We can talk about the bad players.
Exactly.
Okay.
I don't know. But like, my big picture point is, what relevance does it have? And I'm not asking that to say that it's inherently irrelevant. I'm genuinely asking, you know, how should we be viewing wins and losses in this season, in this moment right now for this team? Because it feels like it's in a completely different way than you would for a normal NHL team, right? Like most NHL teams, it's like, okay, they're contenders and you're evaluating everything based on how they look for the Stanley Cup playoffs, or they're a playoff striving team and the big picture thing is the playoff race, or maybe you're a rebuilding team and you're keeping tabs on how the young players are going, right? There's all these different, and there's a template for how you cover those seasons. The Canucks have discovered like a new option. And I don't know how wins and losses relate to the position they find themselves in.
They're a purgatorial cellar buyer.
Yeah. Because they're not out of it. It's not like, oh, the season's a write-off and it's a death march. They're not out of it.
I mean,
they're not a contender.
They could buy, they could sell. Or Jamie, if they want to get frisky with it, they could do a little bit of both. And by the way, that's the right way to do it.
Do both.
This is a hybrid. Right? The word I think we need to use is hybrid.
Mm.
They are a hybrid buyer and seller. And what they should be focused on is netting absolutely as much short-term value. Not in terms of strengthening for this playoff run, but next playoff run. There's actually a loaded opportunity here. And partly it's because, let's be real, unless Utah figures themselves out and gets Gunther back relatively quickly, the Blues ain't catching them. They're a train wreck.
Mm-hmm.
The Calgary Flames are not holding them off. Stop it. Right? The Canucks and the Flames are effectively tied. The Flames are ahead by what? 0.001?
It's a tie. Point it's percentage? 5-6-1 to 5-6-0. It's a dead heat.
Dead heat. So they're tied with the Flames. The Canucks don't even have to play at their best. Like, think about how often this team hasn't even put in a square effort in games this season, and they're tied with a Calgary Flames team that has been max effort every single night. Every single night. Like, yeah. The Flames have been the most dialed team. And these teams, what does that tell you about the respective quality of these lineups? Come on. The Canucks can get worse, true talent-wise, and still make the playoffs. There's opportunity there because it's like you get a high-stakes moment to evaluate what you've got. You're going to go into a critical offseason. Mm-hmm. Like, the Canucks shouldn't be dissuaded from doing what needs to be done as a result of their position. They should be heartened by the fact that they can actually take a step back talent-wise and try. Like, wouldn't you rather go into the playoffs with a team with vibes, like with good vibes and like a breath of fresh air and a shot to overachieve, mm-hmm. as opposed to going in with a group where it's like, yeah, you know what? We probably know the effort level will be there come playoff time.
Well, and I do think that's one of the ways you can view wins right now, because, and the question's already coming in, and we'll get to this at some point. Does this change things? If they get on a heater, does it change things?
No.
I want to put that aside.
Well, the answer is also no.
But, well, is it? Well, it might be from the outside, but is it from the inside?
So I think for management, it's no.
Sure.
There is always the question of ownership, right? And the, like, you know, look, for better or for worse, and often it's been for better given some of the instability that this franchise has dealt with, ownership are huge fans. There are positives that come with that, and yes, there are downsides. But getting excited about a win streak, that's, at the moment, one of the things but that's the only question. Does ownership get excited about the win streak? And if they do, does that even matter in the event that there's just too much water that's flowed under this bridge? Right? That sort of everyone kind of has a good sense of the score and what needs to happen.
Yeah. Because the other way, I think, to look at this is not in the through the lens of, oh, does this change what they're thinking about Miller or Pettersson? Is this, you know, a last-ditch effort by the team to keep the core together? But as you said, you know, wouldn't you rather go into a playoffs with good vibes? I think one way to look at this is the team, potentially at least, if they can actually string some good results together, putting themselves in a position to benefit by addition through the addition by subtraction process. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because there was an alternate path where if you fell out of things, and even if you did get, hey, we solved the locker room issue and we made this trade finally, we bit the bullet and yeah, we took a loss in terms of talent, but the vibes turned around and now we're in a position to play better. Like, there's a path where that could have been irrelevant for this year. You know what I mean? If
totally.
You'd fallen out of it. So
sure.
I think the way to look at this is, well, they're treading water at least. They're still in the thick of the playoff hunt. They should be favored to make it. Considering where the other teams are, they are.
They almost have never not been favored. In fact, the lowest point of the season, which actually was only a week ago, they were still favored to make the playoffs. They were still, you know, you still got plus money on the Flames or the Blues or the Utah Hockey Club. And the lowest that the Canucks odds ever sunk was like 47% implied probability. Like, the Canucks have always been a playoff caliber team. And unless my Utah theory comes to bear here, which, by the way, I'm still not out of, although they had another one of those home losses where they really should have had it. They led in the third. They were the better team for most of the night, although the Penguins played excellent hockey in the second. And then Sidney Crosby gets a sick overtime winner. You know, that, like, okay, cool. Unless Utah crests in a major way, and I think it does require Gunther or a big trade, I just don't think there's any other team that can hang with Vancouver and actually boot them from the playoffs out west. And I've been pretty consistent about that. Like, I think even at this team's nadir, we were pointing out, like, how unfortunate they'd been, right? Their poor finishing, their poor goaltending. Now, I wasn't picking them to turn around because I wasn't sure what would happen with the effort level and the work rate. And because this team doesn't have much offensive juice. We saw it again last night, by the way. right? Like, they scored two goals, but there was no world in which they deserved any more than that. You know? They basically stopped playing offense after 25 minutes. I mean, how many shots did they have after the 25-minute mark?
Yeah, well, I mean, really after the first period.
Yeah, but they had a really sick shift.
Yeah.
They spotted them the lead, and then it was just like, batten down the hatches. It's coin flip hockey.
But anyways, I think the point about Thatcher Demko being the thing that really matters from last night, because that it's something that has the potential to matter for the rest of this season.
Oh, but sorry, I have to interrupt you. We must celebrate this. Perspective is a funny thing, texts in a listener. Remember in 2019 when Bertuzzo beat a teammate up in practice, then the Blues won the cup? There's a world where this works out. We have reached it. The official point of every hopeless Canucks season, where the 2019 St. Louis Blues are brought up as an example. We must cherish this. It is a return. A return to normalcy.
The
gravity
funny thing about that,
still exists.
Though, is this team's never been anywhere close to as bad in the standings as that. The Blues team was dead last in the NHL.
I know.
This team's like tied for a playoff spot right now.
Also, that team was durably good year after year after year after year.
Oh, man.
For a decade.
But anyways, my point is Thatcher Demko, that matters. That's the thing that can matter both like short term, right? Hey, put yourself in a position to benefit if you do make a big deal of some sort that really changes the vibes, changes the outlook for your team for this year. Having a really good Thatcher Demko matters for that. And then, of course, it matters massively what version of Thatcher Demko you get down the stretch here. Looking ahead to his contract decision, and he'll be eligible for an extension, and you've got a big decision to make there about how you want to approach that. So as much as I'm not buying the three game win streak, the vibes are back, all that, like, I'm not buying that at all, I also don't want to completely write off what we saw last night, because I think Thatcher Demko is like, that's a big deal for this team if he gets back to having those types of games with any sort of consistency.
Yeah, I mean that would completely alter the ceiling for this team.
Yeah,
right. So for example, across this three-game win streak, the Canucks have played 31 minutes of tied hockey, okay? They have been outshot in those minutes. They have controlled 45% of shot attempts in those minutes. They have, however, outscored the opposition 4-0 in those minutes. Why? 950 goaltending, 25% shooting.
How do they only have 950 goaltending if they haven't allowed a goal in those minutes?
Oh, good question.
Check
it out.
What's going on there?
I must have, you know what I'm quoting there? Just 5-on-5. I must not be adjusting the, you know what? Honestly, I'm going to check.
Okay. that really threw me for a loop.
No, you're right. I'm glad you mentioned it. I should have caught it myself.
I would think it's 1,000% goaltending.
My bad.
Not to poke holes in what you're saying.
No, I'm,
you know.
Thank you. Yeah, sorry. 23% shooting, 1,000%.
There you go. Yeah.
It's 950 overall. Okay. And 1,000 at tied. 4-0. It's not going to last. And by the way, if you really look at that game, like the first period, I thought the Canucks played okay, but I thought the Predators had the balance of chances. I thought they had the better chances overall in that first period. Second period, I liked, obviously, that shift with the sick Myers feed to Linus Karlsson. Congrats on his first NHL goal.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully you did end up retrieving that puck. I didn't love seeing that, by the way. Having been around it, like, teams are usually pretty dialed in on that. I don't know what happened, but you don't see the referee like trying to give the puck to teammates, a milestone puck to teammates, without them understanding at all what the stakes are for one of their teammates. Like, you don't see that very often, and I don't love it. I didn't love seeing that. But I thought their second period was really good defensively. I just thought the Predators really were like gummed up in the neutral zone and basically had no chances. And then in the third period, I thought Thatcher Demko stole them 2 points.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the Predators hit a couple posts too off high quality chances. But, you know, the Nyquist save, some of the stuff in deep, like, I didn't even think it was one of those examples too where the Predators were like putting good chances into crests or failing to execute. Like, I thought the Predators generated a fair bit. I thought the Canucks were sloppy in a variety of phases of the game, especially on the power play. Obviously the giveaway there by JT Miller was substandard, but Demko was incredible. Like, the truth is the Canucks were outplayed on balance last night. The Predators had a better, had sort of a higher volume of chances overall, were the better team 5-on-5. Canucks penalty killing was killer. And one thing I will give this team credit for is I think we would have understood somewhat. Wouldn't have been happy about it, but we would have understood if they'd put in something of a flat effort. They didn't. That was like a professional effort in pretty trying circumstances.
And I thought, especially early in the game in the first period, it wasn't just professional. Like, I thought they had jump. Whether it led to like really dominating the game
or anything, but
I thought there was like actual jump and like a spring in their step. Even now, it waned throughout the course of the game, but
the Hoglander goal was like legitimately sick.
Yeah, and I mean there were some things they were doing some things well offensively that you haven't seen much this year. That's one of them. But even Pettersson, you know, holding onto pucks, trying to make plays. Again, I don't know if it carried over for the full 60 minutes, but considering the circumstances, without lowering the bar too much here, I looked at that. I was like, all right. That's nice. That's a good, noticeable effort from this team in pretty challenging circumstances. So there's some more we can get into from last night's game and, you know, Thatcher Demko's performance, all of that. I mean, Quinn Hughes, another 2 points. He just continues to be absolutely exceptional. But I do want to move on to the broadsheet portion of the whiteboard here. And the drip of reports from insiders, it's slowed a little bit. Now, there are a couple of things I want to mention in this segment, but I do think it's interesting. I mean, partly because there was a while there where it was like every other day or every day, whether it was Saravalli or LeBrun or Friedman or Dhaliwal, whatever, or Sat, there was like a really juicy new tidbit to come out about the Pettersson-Miller dynamic and what the Canucks' plans were. That's slowed a little bit here, and I think partly because it's just out there now. Like, Jim Rutherford's just come out and said it all. He's made all of the subtext text. And so there's not a lot to speculate about.
We don't
have to sit here and be like, would they really trade both of them? It's like, yes, they would.
Or report anything. You know what I mean? It's like, insiders are saying, read Gary Mason's article.
Yeah. So it's like, partly it feels like this should be the broadsheet's time to shine. But you know what I mean? But Jim Rutherford's taking the wind out of its sails. He's like, no. Guys, there's no rumors here.
Instead of a broadsheet, it's become a broadside.
That's right.
At Canucks star players.
But having said that, there were a couple of things to pass along. One, Rick Dhaliwal on Donnie and Dolly today suggesting that the Colorado Avalanche could be a possibility for JT Miller specifically. Notes that the teams talked about a potential Miller deal a couple of years ago, which that's when I'd forgotten. I always think about the Rangers discussions in the past with Miller, the Pittsburgh one that never went through. But yes, Rick is smart to point out that there were discussions with Colorado as well. Now, he also said, you know, he thinks Colorado needs a center. But would JT Miller go there? We've heard his preference would be to go to an Eastern United States team. Colorado, of course, doesn't fit that bill, and he has the full no move clause to steer the process. I do wonder if that's another part of the Jim Rutherford logic behind the Gary Mason interview. Is now we've heard that JT Miller's not exactly like holding up the works necessarily on a trade with his no move clause, but could you get him to expand things a little bit more? If you make things a little uncomfortable for him, certainly looked uncomfortable talking to the national media yesterday.
I wonder
if that's part of it.
Or the Canucks are posting these like handshake lines.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I swear the body language is like proofs of life. You know what I mean? Like it's.
So I almost, there's a little part of me that wonders if Rutherford is saying like, okay, hey, you'd wave to go to New York. That's great. Maybe expand that list a little bit here, JT, and so we'll see if we can expedite something. So Dhaliwal mentions Colorado as a potential landing spot for JT Miller, and Elliot Friedman just talking a little bit about this story on the Fan Hockey Show earlier today. He said one thing that he thinks the Rutherford interview did, which was interesting. He mentioned, you know, that other players in the room at different points this season have had kind of varying opinions about how serious this issue was. And he said, you know, I'd heard from some agents who said like, hey, I've got a guy in that room and they don't think it's that big a deal. But he'd heard from other players who were like, no, it's a really, really big deal. And basically now with Rutherford saying that, it's like everyone's on the same page. It's a really big deal.
Sorry.
You know what I mean?
So there was like,
so players in the room were split on just what a big deal it was and whether it was a big deal.
Right. Interesting.
You know what I mean? And I wonder if that's like a longevity thing. You know what I mean? Or totally. who's in the know versus... Anyway, there could be a million different things going on there. But again, it's like now the fan base is on the same page. The players are on the same page. The rest of the league, everyone's on the same page now as a result of Jim Rutherford speaking to Gary Mason. And then he also says, I think they have opportunities to deal Miller. They just have to decide if they like the package enough to do it. So It's the latest on the Miller-Pedersen file from Rick Dhaliwal and Elliot Friedman.
Yeah. It's a tough one. It's a tough one.
It's a very interesting one. A very, very interesting one.
And again, this is it. I think there's real opportunity to reset quickly here. And it's not about what's in the package. It's about how much cap you save. You know, like that's one thing that this group's been very good at. There's mistakes. Look, there's going to be Desharnais and Danton Heinens along the way, especially when you're shopping for value. But I think when we look at DeBrusk and Hronek, like buying Hronek and then getting the breakout that they've got from him over the last year and a half, obviously Sherwood, obviously Pew Suter. I think we've seen a pretty high level of pro scouting, and we've seen it both in terms of shopping, like, and paying a retail price for Hronek, buying a top of the line UFA like Jake DeBrusk, but also obviously the dumpster diving stuff has been, you know, like a chopped chef rooting around the pantry. They've come out with something pretty interesting. Oh, so creative. You made a taco. And so I do think that this management group's strengths lend themselves pretty well to this moment, provided that they're able to get max flex out of a Miller deal. Like, so, to me, that's the most important part of a potential package as opposed to the return.
With that in mind, Casey Mittelstadt, theoretically, because it's 5.75 for the next 2 years. But if the logic of trading him to Colorado is probably they're looking at it and saying, like, we don't want Casey Mittelstadt as our 2C, so we don't want to be paying him that, so you take him back.
I mean, Casey Mittelstadt and Elias Pettersson and Pew Suter down the middle of your forward lineup playing Rick Tocchet at hockey sounds like a bad bet to me. Mm-hmm. Just in terms of the specific, like, they're all lefties, you know, they're all... None of them would be described as heavy. None of them are great in the circle. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me as an approach. Now, so if you're getting Mittelstadt, I think you need to be pivoting
from Mittelstadt.
Like, yeah. the ones, I think Mittelstadt is better than the two players I'm about to list. But stylistically, from a, could you go into the playoffs and, like, give the Jets or the Golden Knights or the Edmonton Oilers a serious series, right? I really think it's like Zacha.
Love Travis Zajac.
Well, they're kind of the same guy too, right? Zacha out of Boston or Kotkaniemi out of Carolina, where it's like, if you got a big bodied lefty that you could put on a second line with Connor Garland and they can kill penalties for you and do some yeoman's work two way, and you're playing Rick Tocchet hockey, that becomes a prospect I'm far more interested in than a team with Mittelstadt, even though Mittelstadt's the better player.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I just don't know how much you can factor that in if you're getting an asset that might have more value. You know what I mean? And you might be able to pivot in a different way with it. But that's why it's a really fascinating decision that they have to make, right?
I mean, Mittelstadt and Richie or something, like, provide, you know, if something like that, then you're then I'm singing a different tune.
Yeah, you're getting another asset on top of it.
Like,
know,
I'd even rather see it be like Drury. They just flip Jack Drury again, even though he's not winning draws right now because he's been dealing with an upper body injury, and Richie, now you have me excited. You know what I mean? Like, I just think if you're, especially given the short term priorities here, like, you can make the playoffs, you want to have a good showing in the playoffs, you want to use that to evaluate the group, and then you want to be a playoff team. In fact, you want to be a credible playoff team, like a good team next year. I think you can't completely ignore fit. And by the way, this organization never has. It's been the most important thing they've been focused on in sort of making all of these moves.
Somebody just texted in, they're going to need Kevin McHale level of pivoting over here. What a pull. Post artist Kevin McHale.
Did you know that Pat Riley owns the trademark on the term three-peat?
I did not know that. So what,
like,
a legend.
So, like, he'll make millions and millions of dollars
if the Kansas City Chiefs win.
Wow.
Pat Riley.
And the best part about it is he trademarked it after the Lakers had won back-to-back and they failed to win the third. So he never three-peated, but like every time the Bulls.
But the Bulls did.
The Bulls did. Incredible. And he made like a million out
of
that.
I think that's the last. Oh, no, the Lakers did then later. I was like, when's the last three-peat in North American sports? The Lakers.
Anytime anyone three-peats in the United States of America, Pat Riley gets paid.
So good. All right. So quickly good. To wrap up the whiteboard here. It's a day off, so no lineup notes. They play Dallas tomorrow to wrap up this road trip. And a really quick playoff standings update. Their playoff odds per Dom's model all the way back up to 81%, which is the highest they've been for a while, which, again, is a fascinating backdrop to everything else happening with this team right now.
Yeah, what's funny is their Stanley Cup odds are down. Like, to win the Stanley Cup plus 3,000.
That's because they might trade Elias Pettersson and JT Miller.
I know, but I'm just saying, their Stanley Cup odds are down to plus 3,000, even as their to-make-the-playoff odds are back to minus 200. Still down from, like, the minus 400 that they've been at points this season, but well up from the minus 100 that they were to make the playoffs. I actually think they did hit plus money. I think they were plus
100. They did, I think.
Like a week ago. So some interesting movement there. Do want to note this too, because this is the important one. The Hart Memorial Trophy odds.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time, Quinn Hughes has crested 10-1.
All right.
Draisaitl plus 180. MacKinnon plus 275, Hellebuck plus 350, McDavid plus 550, Quinn Hughes fifth plus 900. And as you can imagine, for the first time all season, as a result of his third consecutive multi-point game and probably 18 of the incredible highlights that were going around hockey Twitter, Quinn Hughes, the favorite, minus money, minus 120 to repeat as the Norris Trophy winner. A reminder, if Quinn Hughes were to repeat, he'd be the first defenseman to do so since Nick Lidstrom 15 years ago. And there's like six guys who've done it consecutively, and they're all Hall of Famers.
Yeah, it's like Orr, Bork, Coffey, who else? Lidstrom.
Rod Langway, Larry Robinson.
Larry Robinson,
but it's like a group of guys like that. Just wake up every day and thank count your blessings among them that you get to watch Quinn Hughes play every night.
All right, we got to take a break here. That's the whiteboard for today. Brendan Batchelor joins us on the other side here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.
Oh, so creative. You made a taco.